Right, we're in the company of historian Dr. Joe Kelly because a century tomorrow, Friday the 17th of October 1925, the Boundary Commission delivered its final report with regards to the decision on changing the changing of the border between the six counties and the Free State. So, Dr. Kelly, back to 2021, right, and the terms of the Anglo-Irish Treaty, did that pave the way for Ireland to be split as such, or what? Like, so what was in that Anglo-Irish Treaty that led to the Boundary Commission being established, you know, and effectively, obviously, denying a united Ireland?
Yeah, so, see, in 1920, the Government of Ireland Act was placed by Lloyd George, and it became law, which basically cut the six counties off from the rest. And in the Government of Ireland Act of 1920, which predated the treaty you're on about, the plan was to have two governments in Ireland, one in Belfast, one in Dublin, and that eventually after 7 years, these two governments would come together. And in the meantime, there'd be a kind of council for Ireland established where there'd be equal numbers from the north and from the south, forming an overall arching government. That was the plan of 1920. And Lloyd George had the opinion, well, this now sorts out the whole Irish question and everything's grand. But when we came to the treaty negotiations of 1921, what we were offered was 26 counties because the north now had been, the six counties had been established. And Collins and the men that were negotiating were saying, hold on a minute, what about the six counties? You're giving us 26. And Lloyd George basically lied. He says, look, take the 26 and sure the six will come back to you eventually. It was never intended, supposedly, to be a permanent border. And that's what was in the Government of Ireland Act. So the treaty, the 1921 treaty, trumped or overcame the 1920 treaty. And so in that was Articles 12, 13 and 14, which were to look at the border at some later stage. But obviously, as we know, a civil war broke out. Collins had said, look, take the 26 and we'll fight for the other six. De Valera says, no, we want a 32. And we ended up having a civil war. So in the meantime, the issue of the border of the six counties, it really consolidated. The civil war consolidated the six counties. And Tyrone, which is a majority Catholic, Fermanagh, a majority Catholic, they were just abandoned because we were busy fighting with ourselves. So now you come to 1923-24, Cosgrave, who's the president of the Irish government at that stage, instigates through the British government saying, look, we want this border commission that is in the 1921 treaty to look at the border. And this is where what we're coming to, the border commission, which is 100 years old tomorrow, the report. They were given a job to go and to define or relook at how this border should actually be. So in other words, it was a relooking at the border based on the 1921 treaty. I don't know if that explains it.
No, it does. So officially then, when did the border become official then?
Well, it didn't become the existing border.
Yeah.
Really, it didn't become official until 1999 in the Good Friday Agreement.
Wow, okay.
But if you want to go back to the fact that it was an understanding, goes back to 1923.
Yeah, yeah, that's the understanding. But I'm on about it sort of being officially recognised. Just back to about the divvying up of the space. Was there any discussion about, you know, actually redrawing the boundaries of counties, if you know what I mean? Like, was that a factor at all? Do you know, whereby you talked about a majority yes. nationalist areas. Yes. Was there any conversation about, well, we could carve Fermanagh up, for an example?
Yes, yes. Well, I just maybe run through the statistics. Armagh was 45% Catholic. Down was 31% Catholic. Fermanagh was 56% Catholic. Parts of Derry, what they call Londonderry City at the time, was 56% Catholic. County Londonderry, the whole county, was 41% Catholic. And Tyrone was 55% Catholic. So there was a very sizable majority of Catholic and nationalist communities in the existing six counties of the time. And so, like had happened after World War One throughout the whole of Europe, borders were redefined, countries were redefined. And so what they did was they set up boundary commissions. This was the practice internationally. And it was in the 1921 treaty that we too would set up a boundary commission in Ireland. But from the start, it was ill-fated. It was never going to work because it was based on the wrong principles. It should have been independent people from outside Ireland, England and Northern Ireland that should have drawn this boundary. But what happened was they appointed three people. One was, so to speak, an independent man called Richard Fetman. He was a High Court judge from South Africa, but he was British born and he had major ties with the British establishment, particularly the Conservative Party. And all the judgments he made, there were three men on the commission, the Border Commission, one from Ireland, Owen McNeill, one from the North, Joseph Robert Fisher, and then Fetman. But Fetman was the chair, and every decision he made was pro-unionist. So, for example, you asked the question, could counties come back out to the North? He said no, only parts of counties into the South. He said that, for example, for areas in the South, sorry, in the North to come into the South, they needed to be 80% Catholic to come into the back into the Free State. But only 60% threshold was required for Protestant communities to go into the North. So he wasn't balanced and he wasn't fair. Fisher at the same time was representing the unionist government of the North, and not an inch. They weren't going to give nothing away. And then unfortunately, and he was a very honourable man, but he was pretty useless, Owen McNeill. We may know him from the Countermanding Order of 1916. He was the Minister for Education, a very well-educated, learned man, but he wasn't up to this. He was too slow in understanding the dynamics and the politics. Mm. And from the start, we were, as a nationalist...
On the back foot.
We were in the back foot. Mm. And basically, they sold us up, and they sold us up so well. And if you read the report, and the sad thing, Greg, is history repeats itself. And I do honestly believe this, that this border poll that's been proposed will end up the same way as this boundary commission. It is so tedious with misinformation, and I don't trust a border poll. It's not going to work because the regulations, if you read actually into the Good Friday Agreement, it is very, very vague. And even if the majority of the nationalist community in the North vote to rejoin the South, it is up to the British government to decide whether that is acceptable or not.
Yeah, but we have seen them cede different areas, Falklands, Hong Kong, you know, other areas around the world. Would they not generally have a reputation at this point of following the will of the people? You're shaking your head. I don't know.
Not sure. Look. We need only to look at the recent thing of the Brexit. Sure, they broke an international agreement then, and they will break this again. And in fairness, and I don't want to be just...
I don't really think London's that interested in Northern Ireland to put up a fight for it.
But it's not about putting up a fight for it. It's the politics of it, and it's the Britannia rules, the waves idea, and we can, so we will. I don't trust them. I've never trusted the English when it comes to negotiations. And look, we need only even look at Bloody Sunday, how Lord Saville tried to cover up that report initially, and then we had to come along later... Sorry, the Saville report unearthed it. But the initial report was very much, it was IRA to blame and everything. Truth is not something that lies with the British establishment. And it's something that I wouldn't trust them. And you'd mentioned Hong Kong. And this is Neil T. Blaney politics. And people in Donegal will know this. There must be a declaration of intent to withdraw. Let's work towards a date, not towards a majority. And let's get serious about this. And everything is on the table. And I say this as a nationalist, as a Catholic, as a Republican, the unionist Protestant community, both sides of the border, we have to find a way for them to still identify as British.
I get you, but the demographics of this country are such, and I presume it would be a countrywide poll, the demographics of this country are such now that the actual deciding factor probably won't be Catholics or Protestants. Or certainly unionists or Republicans, if I could put it like that. There's a massive swathe of people now that are not originally from this country. There are those actually who are Catholic but prefer, like in the North, life in the North under Protestant rule. You know, the Alliance have been increasing in popularity. It is not an orange and green conversation now at all. And then we haven't even had the conversation about the... You know, I mean, there's been reports about financial burdens and all that kind of stuff, but can we get anyone in Galway, Cork, Kerry, Louth, not Louth, but, you know, to actually care enough to even engage in this conversation in a meaningful way, they'll hear voices saying that, you know, now this will mean such and such per euro of income tax or this, that and then. You know, the conversation isn't going to be about nationalism, unionism, Catholic and Protestant. It's going to be about people with moderate views, people that have no interest, that have only just come here, and money and infrastructure and jobs and the size of the civil service in Northern Ireland, you know, where you'd get your cancer treatment, all this kind of stuff. That's the real convo, not necessarily the terms of the Good Friday Agreement or what have you. We have not even begun, in my view, to have the proper conversation about what will be the deciding factors in any future border poll on this island, Joe, I think.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I couldn't but agree 100%. I think it's very insightful, everything that you've said there. I'm not a geographical Republican that we have United Ireland, just a geography, a circle around a map, and that we've the border's gone, because that's going to achieve absolutely nothing. But I want to go back to the Secretary of State of Northern Ireland, 1923, Wilford Spencer, and this ties in with what you said. His wife kept a diary, and she was talking in 1923 as she was driving around what was then Northern Ireland, how, and this I just quote, it gave one a strange feeling to see a country so unnaturally and geographically divided, like seeing a living creature cut in two. As a nation, as a country, we've been cut in two since 1920. And the issue is about how we heal that cut. And therefore, everything has to be on the table. And it's not about one side trumping the other side. And that's a massive conversation. And like, if we can spend upwards of $4 billion a year on migrants coming into our country, surely to God, we could think about the people that we've abandoned in the north. We have abandoned, as a free state, we abandoned the people, nationalist community of Northern Ireland. The fact that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil never even contested an election in the six counties and left the Catholic community abandoned. We got what we wanted, and to hell with them. And that's unfortunate. And the same can be said equally for the unionist and Protestant population, particularly here in Donegal.
Okay, what we see, we've seen this actually develop in our numerous conversations over the years, that the way people feel right now is it's nothing new. It's often based in history, or it often goes back, you know, our attitudes, whether we vote certain ways, whether we're rebellious and all that kind of stuff, right? So Donegal for a long time has felt abandoned by Dublin, isolated, a tiny little strip, didn't get the attention yet. You know, Donegal was negotiated for, and or maybe it wasn't. Maybe the Free State, it was on the table. If you want to take Donegal, take Donegal. I don't know, but obviously then we had no one looking out for us from a Belfast perspective. So, in the intervening years between, say, from 1920-21 till now, you know, was there any political pushback, be it from the unionist community or the community generally in Donegal, to say, right, okay, well, this is the new setup, right? But where are we in this space? You know, or maybe it was just unionists seeking to become part of the union as they'd seen it. So, did anything happen over the following years, sort of politically in that area, or even just sort of from the ground up?
Yeah, well, initially, for example, in Donegal, the Protestant community, particularly then close to the border, lost out a terrible lot financially as farmers. So, for example, there was the famous Derry Donegal milk wars. So when the six counties was formed, the Northern Ireland government then made regulations regards milk. So the Protestant farmers of Donegal would normally go to Strabane with their produce, could now no longer go in there. And this led to a milk war. It was a very, very famous milk war. But so in 1934, over 7,000 people in Donegal in the border area signed a petition asking to be put back into or put across the border.
Now that's significant.
Very, very significant. And that was seen as treasonous at the time, and it was heavily investigated. And what really drove the unionist community or the Protestant community in Donegal at that time was in 1932, De Valera came to power. And one of the first things he did was he got rid of the Governor General. And he also redefined us in their sense of our citizenship and removed the right to be a British citizen out of the citizenship of Ireland. And for many, that was a step too far, as I said to you, that had fought in the war, that had seen the king as their king, and now all of a sudden they were being excluded from their tradition or their family history in being connected with that. And one has to be respectful of that. I am a Republican, I'm not into that, but at the same time, you have to respect that. And they felt very aggrieved, so they signed a petition, but it got nowhere. It was ignored and maybe fell on deaf ears. So there's two sides to this, and there's a lot of healing needed.
I think all of this, too, it's a hangover from these times, is why certain things annoy me so much. Part of South Donegal being in Sligo, Leitrim. I know this is political, right? It annoys the crap out of me. This line that's been drawn through Donegal from a media perspective, whereby, you know, it's North and South Donegal. You saw back in the day when newspapers were selling well, two different papers, North and South. This line was established, splitting up the airwaves so that South Donegal was part of Sligo Leitrim, right? No radio station has successfully ever been able to cover the south of Donegal because the main populace is Sligo, and then you're trying to go, and you can't. They're culturally different people, they're all different. And I think that's why that annoys me, this media division and political division in Donegal. We're still being chopped up, carved up and treated unfairly, in my view. Not in any way on the scale that we've been talking of up until now, but that division and divisiveness is still all over Donegal in 2025, and I would love to see that change. I would love us to be a county-wide radio station. The newspapers, they'd argue probably they are county-wide, but anyway, there was a time where two different papers were published. You know, like, give us our county back in that regard as well. Let people of Bundoran and Ballyshannon and Pettigo vote in the blooming elections for South Donegal.
Yeah, but the political elite that run this country have learned very, very well from their British masters of old. You divide. I mean, they divided us for 100 years, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, in the Civil War, and we took our eye off the ball. We took the eye off the ball when it came to the six counties. We took our eye off the ball when it came to economics and development. But long as we were on one side or another, the parties knew that they would get the vote. I think the younger generation have woken up to this. And I mean, they've divided us again, just even in the presidential election we have. They've given us no choice in real terms. And this is what they do. And you keep control. If you can divide what's below you, you keep control. And
what you mean by that is centre, left, left, really. That's the two options there. That's the political spectrum. Conservatism, sorry, snorting there. You know, centrist sort of conservatism is not represented on the ballot paper. That's what you're talking of there, isn't it?
Not necessarily. I don't think, I mean, I don't want to get into the presidential thing. I don't care what a candidate believes or stands.
No, but you know for a fact where they are on that political line determines whether their policies align. I can't imagine you ever voting people before profit.
No, but what I could do is I could vote for anybody if I knew that they were a person of integrity. They may not be left or right or this or that. A president isn't necessarily.
But it's integrity as it vibes with you, though.
But for me, a president, and this is what is in the Constitution, is non-political. I want somebody with integrity, someone that is rooted, someone that has culture and heritage, someone that can unite.
You admire Michael D. Higgins. He's a Labour man.
Admire him. Yeah. And I would be ideologically wouldn't agree with a lot of what he says. Okay. I admire things that are in Catherine Connolly. I admire things that are in Heather Humphreys. There's things that I don't like about both of them as well. But I'm always open to seeing the person in the round and the full. And it's the same when it comes to Northern Ireland and the six counties in our Ireland. You know, it's interesting, Greg, the word diabolos in Greek it means to divide, which gives you the word devil. And anywhere you see division, so to speak, for the Greek mind, that's the devil, that's division. And where you see people divided, where you see a county divided, where you see a province divided, that's not good. There should be unity, union. And where there's union, there's a chance of peace, there's a chance of progress. And unfortunately, our history in Donegal is one that we were abandoned. Only 6 miles of Donegal touches the Free State. And if you go back to the 1925 report, which will be 100 years tomorrow, certain areas of Donegal from Muff into St. Johnson were to go back into the six counties, and certain areas were to come back out. 39,000 acres were to move from Donegal into the north, and then certain areas around Beleek, Pettigo, they were to come back out to us in Fermanagh, They were all to move in and out.
Okay.
But the commission itself collapsed. It collapsed because the Cosgrave government of the time said, look, we're not going to give any of the 26 counties back in. That's not what was understood in this commission. We were to get areas back into our country, not give away areas.
And neither happened in the end.
And neither had, and it was squashed in 1968.
These decisions were made 100 years ago, but even now, in terms of simply policing, you know, the police argue for extra resources up here. We've got a water border to the left, a land, not a land border, but you know what I mean, a border to the right. And there's no extra resources, no extra provision, no nothing. That's just in the one issue of policing. Do not get me started on health. Dr. Joe Kelly, imagine why. Thank you so very much indeed. Have a lovely day. I'm in studio now with Evelyn McGlynn, owner of Evelyn Marketing. Is it Evelyn McMarketing?
Yeah, Evelyn McMarketing.
I haven't noticed that before. Do you know, it was written down. Lovely.
Yeah.
So it's Evelyn McMarketing.
Yeah.
Right, and we're talking about the official launch of Donegal Giving. It's a not-for-profit initiative celebrating the spirit of giving in Donegal while creating an even stronger culture of giving, time, wisdom, knowledge and opportunity. So in terms of, you know, you can, this is backed up with, you know, the likes of Just Giving and other sort of websites, but also the stuff that we see from time to time. We are a very generous county, aren't we? Generous to each other, generous with our money, generous with our time.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, the thing about it is Donegal Giving, I bought the domain about 8 years ago and has been sitting on this until now. And now is just, I believe, the right time to do it. So it's about celebrating the great culture of giving that is in the county. You know, all the not-for-profits, the social enterprises, the whole day-to-day giving that we do as a people.
But so this, it's an umbrella term, really, isn't it?
It is.
It is donations, it's time,
yeah,
it's paying
it
forward.
Yeah, and yet it's really not about money. You know, it's the very least... Of course, there's going to be money involved at some stage because people give all the time to their their local football team or they give to the charities or whatever. But it is really about, you know, sort of, especially sort of time, talent, wisdom and opportunity with the four things, the four pillars we're looking at, but also then taken into giving to self and giving to the environment. So, you know, as something in very simple terms to explain that is, you know, if you go to your local charity shop, by going in the first place, you're supporting that charity, then you're giving them financial support. You're giving to the environment because you're recycling. You're possibly taking the gift and giving joy to somebody that you've bought something. And so this entire giving, it's not as in your volunteering, mm-hmm. which is completely different. And Donegal volunteering, we're going to send everybody there. They're going to be busy. But we're really sort of encouraging people to build a culture of kindness through giving.
Yeah, okay. So how do you see it? We'll talk about the event itself. How do you see it working moving forward, Evelyn?
Well, that's a good question. And I suppose for the last since, so how it really happened this year was Karen Murphy invited me to an event in ATU and Una and Paul from the Citizens, the Civic Lab for Young People were sort of doing an event and a spark was lit. And the idea of Donegal Giving and them together at this event would be a sort of a good union. And so how, I suppose, I didn't actually realise what an immense goodwill there would be to the concept. And everything came together very quickly. So it's been almost like a feasibility study in the process since May. You know, I thought maybe we'd have 30 or 40 people, it would be great, and people start talking about it. You know, I went to Richie in the theatre and he said, you know, absolutely, have the building, you know, the food, the photography, everything, the video, everything came automatically, said, absolutely, this is a brilliant concept. So where will it go? I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it will be led by the people because it belongs to the people. It's a not-for-profit. At the minute, it's not a social enterprise. It's not a charity. It is just a group of people, you know, from interns to good friends to people who've been dragged along to people who are excited about the concept, that the idea of giving more and giving, you know, even in my own life and, you know, in my 13 years in business, the amount of opportunities that I have been given, you know, really, you know, and referrals and just people that I hope that I've also helped along the way. So it will be to celebrate that going forward.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Yeah, because as I framed it earlier on, and it was accurately about how generous we are of our time, of our care, it is sometimes it's reactionary, you know. And really evidence elsewhere, it's almost like there's two lanes of traffic going here. Evidence elsewhere is that we are becoming a little bit more siloed, you know what I mean? That we're not as inclined to look out for each other.
Yeah.
Right. When there's a crisis, we're fantastic, right?
Absolutely.
But in terms of being sort of proactive and living life in a certain way, focused on giving, maybe you really see that if you go to Boston or you go to Dubai or you go to Sydney.
Yeah.
You know, that real sense of community that's ever present. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes you do have to go to see that. It's not as obvious here. London's the same.
Yeah, I think as well that sometimes we do need to stop in our tracks and think. You know, we are, whether it's marketing departments or whatever, you know, we're told eat five fruit and veg a day, you know, check your tracker, how many steps have you done today? You know, and if you say to somebody, did anyone ever ask you or tell you that you should give more and not money? And I keep saying it's not about money, you know, just in the terms of giving. There are wonderful people doing, but are you actually thinking about it? You know, what are the different ways that we can give? And, you know, you and I could sit here all day talking about them, everything in terms of giving respect, advocacy, you know, giving kindness.
But I'm just more, I think really it's the consequences of it. I just wonder, say, for instance, if, you know, something like this catches on, does that mean that we could have a space where people genuinely are more comfortable talking about their mental health, for an example? Do you know what I mean? That it creates an environment where, you know, certain boundaries are actually broken down rather than us talking about constantly breaking them down.
Yeah, I think that there's an opportunity for people to talk about things that maybe that at the minute are a given or unspoken. And by the sort of the conversations already, you know, I've got young interns who talk about how Donegal giving will affect them and how opportunities may come their way, you know. And again, you know, it's business, it's community, it's not for profits. And even in terms of, you know, if you break it down to the website itself, you know, we will have the ability and the skills, hopefully, to celebrate all giving in a media sense. Mm-hmm. You know, we will take happily any stories of wonderful giving on any levels. And of course, that involves the organisations that you're talking about, you know, whether it be mental health or physical illness or, you know, all of the many different things that will be discussed.
Right. So the launch event, would you call it that? Or the beginning of the public journey?
Yeah.
It's on Thursday, November 6th, as you say, on Green On Theatre have been very giving of their facilities as well. They're hosting it. Runs from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. So
1:30 actually.
Sorry, I beg your pardon. 1:30. So what happens on the day?
Okay, so I mean, it was important to us that we had all of the sectors covered, you know, from the non-profit, the social enterprise, the students, the educator, the community groups, and just the individuals who have an interest in it. So we have a number of sort of leaders in terms of business and in community. We have a brilliant panel. So we have Eamon from Donegal Volunteers, who's going to talk about the whole volunteering process. We have Seamus from Relay for Life, who's going to talk about the great success in terms of giving there. We have Kristen, who will talk from a young professional student, you know, working situation. And then we have Nicola from Country Home by the Sea from an influencer point of view or from a digital point. So they'll all be talking about that. We have Sylvester from FinTru, and we have Caroline Faulkner, who sort of leaders in industry, who will talk about how giving affects their daily lives and how they're giving in industry and in work. Then we're going to have sort of lightning talks. So we're going to have people like Liquid Therapy, Alzheimer's, you know, different organisations who just give us a sort of a brief look at what, you know, giving means. And overall, for everyone, what it is, you know, how Donegal Giving can support their giving journey, how can it help them turn it more into a habit, what opportunities we can offer them in terms of free of charge.
I mean, you talked of opportunity too, just yesterday speaking to two great young lads from the Donegal Centre for Independent Living. We learned that in Donegal, you know, 30-odd percent of people with a disability have a job. That's much lower than the national average, and the national average is much lower than the European average.
Yeah.
Okay, so giving opportunity. I presume, you know, this is the kind of stuff we're talking
yeah,
about as well.
And they're there. They're actually there at the event. We have over 30 stands as well. Mm. So in terms of that. So again, it's just opening up the idea that we can all give on any level. And that, you know, sometimes if you see, you can be, you know, that saying, if you can see it, you can be it, or whatever it is. So for going forward, maybe one day this will just be a common word. Donegal giving will be something that'll be automatically mm-hmm. thought in the process. But certainly it's a proof of concept before we even start. We have 230 people coming along to this, and, you know, they're not really even sure. It's a curiosity, mm-hmm. I think. They're not sure like that. What it's going to be when it grows up, we're not 100% sure.
Okay, well, the whole thing is launched on Thursday, November 6th, 10 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. We're broadcasting live from
you
it
are.
As well too, which is yep. great. You can book your position or your space there, as you heard from Evelyn, many have already, hundreds have already. If you go to donegalgiving.com, you'll see the launch event along the top banner there, or wherever it might appear on your mobile phone. And you can... First of all, read more about it, who's going to be there,
yeah.
and also satisfy your curiosity,
yeah,
potentially.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's so important to thank everybody, because when somebody comes up with any idea, sometimes the giving of support and the giving of encouragement is what moves them from one direction to the next. And certainly in this idea, it was swept along by the amount of people who said, this is a good idea. I like the idea of this. I want to be part of it. So I want to thank everybody and everybody that's booked. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you all on the 6th.
OK, Evelyn McGlynn, owner of Evelyn McMarketing. Of course, we'll be talking about it in advance, flagging that we're going to be there. Thanks so
Brilliant.
Much for calling in.
Thanks. No problem. Thank you.
These. Now, following on from our conversation with Dr. Joe Kelly, just to let you know that the Donegal Historical Society, they're holding a one-day conference on the Boundary Commission. It's on Saturday, the 8th of November, and it's in the Old Courthouse in Lifford, beginning at 9:45 a.m. If you want more details on that, go to the Donegal Historical Society's Facebook page. So presumably they'll have a range of voices and lots of conversation there as well. Now, a petition has been launched to get Donegal County Council to fix the Backlone Road between Carrickmore and Rateen. The road, I'm told, is essential for residents, the local farmers, and even heavy goods vehicle drivers. Alice Lynch of Maggie's Tavern in St. Johnstone's with me now. Hi, Alice.
Good afternoon, Greg, and thank you for having us on. Thank you.
All right. So, I mean, obviously, to get to this point, you've been obviously talking about this in the local community for quite some time. You know, you don't just sort of go, right, everything's fine, and then the next day you start a petition. So historically, what's been the situation? What are you having to deal with?
Right, well, historically, the road is only a small road. It's only a narrow road. And I suppose in years gone back, 50, 60, 70 years ago, there was never a need for a big road. But now, as we have moved on, there's loads of cars, there's loads of farmers, there's other businesses, and most especially there's children going to school, and they have to use that road. There is more cars in the road, and the road has not been moved on. So all we are looking for, very simply, is somewhere that you can pull in. At the moment, if you meet one car coming down the back lawn and you're going up it, some one of those cars has to reverse a whole at least 400 metres back the way. So that's fine, but sometimes the road is that narrow that a good number of cars have fallen into the one side, and this is where the problem is. Their underbody of their car is damaged. Now, that never goes anywhere, but as the car owner has to sort that out and square that up. But I have known a lot of people now that just won't use the car. Mm. If you were using Google Maps and you were coming from Letterkenny and you wrote on the Google Maps or put into it that you wanted to go to Carrickmore, it brings you that road.
That's what's going to be one of my questions,
So all we're looking for is something, some two places for you to pull in, and then the other car can go past. It's not safe for to reverse 400 metres. And then think, then, is there going to be somebody else coming? Like, the whole thing has moved on from 50, 60 years ago, but that road has not been looked about with the council. And it's just to let the council know. If they don't know, how are they meant to know that it's not at all these problems are coming out. So for the last year or two, I was sitting thinking about it, talking about it, and others then were saying about it, well, why don't we do something about it? And then who wants to take the lead? But then it got that bad then that I said, okay, I'll take a lead, get a petition going. And if we have the petition going at the moment. I have about 500 signatures. And anybody that wants to join that petition, just to messages on our Facebook page, maggies.ie, and we'll get you, email you over one. But it's just to make awareness that how dangerous it is. And the community had a photograph yesterday in the paper, and we're just trying to let the council know how dangerous
so,
it is.
So, I mean, the road surface middling, is it? I mean, obviously, you know, the sides of the road can always be cleaned up in terms of hedges and all that type of stuff. Is it the view of locals that spaces for pulling in would be sufficient, at least in the interim?
In the interim, spaces for to pull in and then to cut the hedge. But like just places to cut so that the cars could be at least pull in the meantime. That would be all we're looking for.
Okay.
And there is drains, and the reason why cars are falling into the hedge is because there's a big 3-foot drop. So that if you go on a wee bit to try and think that you're going to let somebody pass, and then all of a sudden you see all the growth, so you think that there's clay there, but there isn't.
Okay.
It's just an open drain, so which is very dangerous.
Right, okay, well, the council have
responded.
Yeah, the council have responded, and I'm not going to lie to you, it's a mixed bag. They say the Carrickmore to Rateem Road is a local rural road. As like other local roads, the characteristics does not permit two-way traffic, and vehicles yield to one another in a give-take manner. There are no plans, nor is there funding to widen the said road. Now, the community, they say, can submit an application to Donegal County Council following consultation with the executive engineer under community involvement schemes for the provision of lay-bys along the roads, which you've talked of. So really, your point of contact, by the sounds of things, is to make a submission to the executive engineer of Donegal County Council.
Yeah, well, we have sent on an email, and I have had no response. So that's the first time that I've heard anything regarding that. So which, of course, we welcome. And of course, we will go through whatever systems they want, but they have not responded to the email that I have sent, and I did copy to Councillor Martin Harley, who acknowledged it. So the council hasn't been in correspondence yet, but that's great to hear that they have communicated through yourselves regarding that, so we can lead on and communicate with them.
Yeah, and it seems the community involvement scheme, you might get a favourable hearing in relation to that, but keep us involved in the conversation. Because, and I don't mean to blow my own trumpet or anything, but it does, Alice, make a difference, if you know what I mean. So keep us in the loop, and hopefully it's safer for all road users, including, as you were going to mention again, children going to school. They deserve a safer passage as is humanly possible with the infrastructure that's there. Alice Lynch, thanks for your time. She is, of course, of the famous Maggie's Tavern in St. Johnstone. Good news, by the way, I'm told it's good news, that a listener's down at Mount Errigal this morning for my weekly climb, fair play to you. Now, the car park's being tarred, they say, so well done to Donegal County Council. So there you go. Apparently, the car park down at the Mount Errigal is being tarred. So that is good news. Great to hear Vincent Keaveney on the radio earlier, a great supporter of young Irish business people in London and a huge encouragement to them. Congratulations on your well-deserved award, Doreen and Cyril Kennedy in Letterkenny. In relation to the defective concrete block scheme, shocking news this morning that Pat the Cope Gallagher and Charlie McConnellow turned the back on the very people they depended on to put them into their jobs. Typical attitude of, I'm all right, Jack, who cares about the minions? Well, you knew their positions coming up to the elections, you know, and you knew the positions of all parties and none. Really? So they were given that mandate. Re-road safety. This year, the clocks didn't go back. We had to walk. Sorry, the year the clocks didn't go back, we had to walk to school in the dark. We were all issued with armbands to keep us safe. And the clocks are going to be going back again soon, aren't they? Is it time we got shot of that, really? Right, now, Micheál is with me now. Good morning, Micheál. Thanks for your time, Micheál Brennan. People know you, of course. What's the crack?
Not so bad. How are you?
I'm doing all right. We had a caller earlier on talking about the speed van in Glenties. It's on the main street, is it, Micheál? You're familiar with this. What's your views on it?
Yeah, well, it comes just as a, as far as I'm concerned, it's a tax collecting opportunity. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, really. Mm. But they're not. We don't have a problem with speeding on the in the town itself. We've got a new.
But how can you shoot fish ramp. In a barrel if there's no speed?
Yeah, well, we have a speed ramp. We have everything like that. There is no. My problem with it is that where the real deadly issues are happening are outside of these. Outside, they're in the 80 kilometer zones. Yeah. They're in the 100 kilometer zones. It's not like we don't have an issue of people getting knocked down or people, you know, speeding through the town recklessly. Like if they're catching somebody doing 52 in a 50 zone, it's hardly, I don't know. I suppose it's breaking the rules, I know, but I don't think we have that issue anyway.
Of it on the places around the area, Micheál, not to put words in your mouth, that there are places that you would say, right, okay, you know what, if it was there, it might stop some girl going too quick around a corner and losing control of the vehicle. It's not saving any lives on Glenties Main
it's
Street.
It's not saving lives. Exactly. And like setting up on, he set up on New Year's Eve, he set up on New Year's Day, and you're just going, what are you trying to prove? But again, like that, we have that whole new road from Glenties to Dunlow, a massive road. Mm. If you're out walking along that road on the cycle path, walking path, the speeds that are going there definitely feel like they're very fast. Why is he not out there?
Yeah.
On that road to try and get people to slow on that road, mm. as opposed to on the main street where, I don't know, it seems like a taunt nearly, but I don't, like, you're going to get people that, like, I know, I don't have penalty points, but my mother got penalty points driving from Glenties to Killybegs. She was driving the same speed from in the 80 zone as she was, and then she went into the over towards our drag, got penalty points, and you're kind of going, like, she wasn't driving recklessly anywhere along the way.
Mm.
But it's just like, and then you get somebody that knows there's a speed van, they're on Snapchat, they're on whatever, they're going to speed vans here, there, wherever. So they're driving recklessly and then slowing down when it gets to it. It's kind of defeating the purpose.
And I think too, Micheál, you know, we hear this all around the county. I'm thinking of outside St. Patrick's Church in Donegal Town. Termon doesn't come up as much as it used to in the past. Glenties, there's a few other spots. It's not that people want to speed. It's not that people actually really don't want speed vans. It's how the resources are being used, and the public are the people out in the roads, and they're saying, look, all right, if someone is 2 kilometres over the 50, and they shouldn't be, right? But if you've got a certain amount of resources to try and keep people safe, there's better ways to use those resources. Otherwise, it does look like a money-making exercise.
Exactly. Like, that's it. Put it places that you're actually going to save lives. Like, obviously, nobody should be speeding anyway. Like, it shouldn't be. But it's the case of even when they changed the speed limit from 100 down to 80. Like, I've never seen speed vans out along that the Fintown to Letterkenny Road where it was 100, and then when it dropped to 80, next thing, there was a speed check there, countless days, and you're going like, that's you're kind of going, why are you doing it right now? Why did it suddenly happen now when it changed down to 80?
It's a bit sus, isn't it?
You know.
Yeah, and it's not good for PR too, and bringing the people with you with the road safety message. Sorry, Micheál, you were going to say there.
And like, and also in Glenties, like, they talk about safety and safety of pedestrians, but there's a junction at the bottom of the town where they added 3 bollards that people used to use as a turning point, and they stopped people turning, and now where my house is in the estate, the people are coming in. We get 20, 30, 40 cars a day coming in to turn around. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And you're kind of going, how is that making it any safer with kids in the estate? And it's not that, like, you can't let the kids out the front at all.
Yeah.
But there's like the first week it went up, I counted for the first few days and there was 30 to 40 cars every single day turning, and they're turning, they're making ridiculous turning manoeuvres now as well. They're reversing in off the main road, they're reversing back out onto the main road, and the council just don't seem to care. They're just like, it's there, it's the way it is, good luck to yous. And
that's
Yeah, it's way more significant because the people are coming down out of the town and then they're meeting people that are turning more dangerously than previously. So now I'm just waiting for the first accident because I've already highlighted it to them, to the guards, and they've done nothing about it. They've just ignored it, just say that's the way it is, good luck to you.
All right, might chase that one up separately actually, Micheál, because you know, every action is a reaction, and pushing a problem into an area where kids are and families and buggies and what have you are actually, you know, moving about the place.
And all it takes is one a child to step out,
God forbid,
as you're putting them into the van or into the car.
Micheál, listen, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for taking the call. I do appreciate it. That's Micheál Brennan there. I was reading a text verbatim and I referred to Errigal Mountain as Mount Errigal. I generally try not to correct the texters because everyone uses their own language, but Oliver has corrected me. Of course, the Mount Errigal Hotel car park is tarred. Why wouldn't it be? Big, beautiful hotel. Yes, I'm talking about the car park at Errigal. But thank you for that. Thanks for all your texts and comments and calls and all of that kind of jazz. Join us again tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock. We'll kick things off with the Friday panel because it's the end of the week already. But for me, Greg Hughes and Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, have a great day.